Thank you. All right. I'll do a lot of the introductory stuff pre-recorded before we get to you, so I'm simply going to start off by saying, Jim Hamilton, thanks for being with us today. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us from beautiful Sedona, Arizona.
Hey, Bill, somebody has to be here, and I'm doing the best I can, right?
Hold down the fort, as they
say. Exactly.
Jim Hamilton is a writer and a coach and is putting together some programs as well. He has a website out there, Core Resonance, and formerly known as Visionaries Lab. He has several books. You'll find them on Amazon. I was just looking at a title, Visionaries Thrive in All Times, A Blueprint for Reality Creation by Jim Hamilton. As I read your website and looked at some of your history, you know, there's a lot of talk these days about the creating your own reality and the, you know, what ended up being the movie The Secret and so many other books and programs and things like that. But as I read your website, I kind of get the impression that you were cool before the rest of it was cool.
Well, I think that's maybe fair. I was actually introduced to Abraham Hicks, maybe in 1994. And I even right now, as I think about it, those guys are old friends to me, and I feel like a seedling of their teachings, if you will. So I gravitated to their stuff very quickly and learned a lot, and consider myself an extension of their work. And of course, I've extended it out in my own manner. But clearly, law of attraction is a fundamental concept.
Right, the idea of creating one's own reality by one's thoughts, and then the how that leads to action and all that. How did you come to you? You and I were talking before the interview started. You've been in this for many, many years. How did you come to start with it? What was your little aha moment?
Well, gee, let's see if I can do that kind of quickly. When I was between, let's say, 1 year old and 6 and 7 years old, I was in touch with where I came from before I was born. And as I grew into boyhood, I knew that that camaraderie and connection was fading and would fade, and it did. And by the time, let's say, I was 8 years old, it was gone. But that connection or remembrance has kind of driven my whole life. And when I was 23, a few years after high school, is when I discovered meditation. And I now have 40 years of meditation, and It's all of my choices and decisions as I've grown up have been founded in what I called the term rhythm of the universe, which comes from that year, those period of years between, let's say, 1 or 2 years old and 7 or 8, and that connection that was so foundational to me as I grew into a body and all that, as crazy as it sounds.
No, that's really interesting, and you make a good point in that we all probably come with that remembrance of where we were before, or maybe even the agreements we made to come into this world and do certain things, or at least to try certain things. And then for some reason, well, I guess that's called society, or what Don Miguel Ruiz would say, we have that conditioned out of ourselves, or it's done for us by those around us, those we perceive to be authorities.
Yes, that's right. I call that the black and white world. If you want to live in color, you have to break out of the status quo. And, you know, I actually think it's right this minute, I got a lot of Beatles songs running through my head because I watched a Cirque du Soleil movie, and one of them was a bunch of Beatles songs. And there was a time on this planet when the Beatles, that was the first globally broadcast program when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan or something like that. And of all things, love was what they talked about and what they sang about. And I say that jogging was another iteration of people discovering themselves and breaking out of the black and white, tried and true. And so here we are now as a society, and we're growing and becoming conscious very rapidly. And, you know, I'm here to contribute whatever it is I got to contribute, as are so many people.
As I read your website and your materials, I'm struck by not so much the idea of creating our own reality. Like we've said, that's something that's very popular out there, in our community at least, and something that I think most folks on a path of spirituality or self-discovery. Most folks pretty much accept that as a given at this point. But as I read farther down, I do appreciate you have a little, it's, you know, that's not where it ends. That's not the be-all and end-all, you know, that we are in a, as you said, not only are we responsible for what we attract, but we have within us the ability to partner with the forces around us, spirit or God or whatever you choose to call that force. And that, I think, is where I'd like to go as we talk a little bit more, is how do we get in touch with that ability to partner with, you know, our spiritual allies to make things a little better for us here in the 3D world?
Okay, that's a great question. Visionaries Thrive in All Times is the foundation of all my work, and I wrote it between 2001 and late 2004, and it was introduced at the first What the Bleep conference in Santa Monica in early 2005. And one of the fundamental premises of that book, two fundamental premises, is one, your nervous system is your connection to the cosmos. It's like considering your nervous system to be a living antenna system, and actually the means by which innate intelligence, the term I use for God, and I use source and the divine and cosmos and other terms interchangeably, but your nervous system is like a living antenna system, and it's a receiver, and what we really do is receive. And so to understand that our nervous system is our connection is a very important understanding, and that's how we reach out to the cosmos and vice versa. But a second component of that is understanding that if you want to escape who and what you are, in other words, the momentum or the progression of your family lineage and who you are popped out as the end result of that, if you want to escape that and become more, because there is a lot of limitation built in, if you will, we need to partner with something bigger than ourselves. And I say if you're going to partner with something bigger than yourself, why not go for the whole thing? And you can see in nature that there's an order that everything shares. And in fact, with telescopes and microscopes and everything imaginable, there's a common order that everything shares. And I say if you're going to play the game and play it right, you need to partner with something bigger than yourself. And I call that innate intelligence. And in fact, it takes reality creating out of your hands on your own, because we're actually quite limited in our own capacities. And if we want to contribute to making the world a better place, we need to move beyond our own limitations, and that's why partnering with something bigger than ourselves is an essential component to quality reality creation.
Sure. We're fish in the aquarium. We're fish in the fishbowl, so trying to change that fishbowl from the inside like that, like you said, we have limited options there. But if we get somebody to help us, then so much the better, and so much more we can do.
Yeah, there's an order that everything shares. I used to think a long time ago, you know, the planets aren't bumping into each other. You know, the oceans stay where the oceans are supposed to stay. The life comes and goes, and there's just an overall order. And actually, one of the subjects I'd like to head toward is the idea of the part that resistance plays in our reality creating, because in non-resistance, this whole world becomes available to us. And I'll say in a very simplified manner, unconditional love is the opposite of resistance. And in unconditional love is the beginnings of understanding the quality of our connection and how to maintain it or how to have it.
Well, you've already taken a step down the road that I was going to go on there for us, so I'm happy to follow along. So how do we start that process of partnering with the bigger forces, the greater good out there in the universe? What's a good first step for those of us that recognize it and go, yes, okay, I'm ready, sign me up?
Well, so let's look at it this way. What they say fundamentally is what you focus on expands, as the definition of law of attraction, or maybe a more sophisticated definition would be like attracts like. And we don't realize how much of our reality creating, or how much of we put out, or how much of what we put out is resistance based. And so reality is actually held together on this planet by resistance, and it's really part and parcel of our makeup. And the reason for that is when we're in our natural state of connection with the cosmos, we have access to presence, and in presence we have access to guidance. And in guidance is how we mesh with the bigger picture. And somehow humanity slipped its leash, or I could, a lot of different ways I should say that's probably a little smarter. We got out of sync with our natural state of connection. And what happened was, in my opinion, it was when we got out of that natural state of connection, the brain converted over and attempted to process the world. And it actually got an overload very quickly. It then set up the mind as a repository of automated, habitual, and reactionary responses to everything, and that's the foundation of resistance for us as a species. We're out of our natural state of connection. We're on our own. There's an overload of information, so resistance is foundational to how we get along. And when you recognize law of attraction and resistance, you go, well, I mean, you can look around in the world and you can see it. And so what's the opposite of that? Allowing. And so as we learn, you know, and that's Abraham and lots of other people talk about that. But that's the beginning, that the recognition, the part resistance plays in your life, and especially the automatic and automated responses that we spit out that are founded in resistance. And so I would, to answer your question, the beginning is to begin to understand the mechanism that resistance plays and to learn how to move to allowing. And that's the beginning of the game.
And as you talk about that, I keep hearing that's the basis, like you mentioned, the processing, the trying to take it all in, the being overwhelmed by it. And yet that sounds like what has led to our subconscious thoughts, beliefs, patterns of thinking, that sort of thing. The things that we aren't even mindful of in our everyday life. And yet, you know, most brain scientists will say subconscious is what? 90% of thinking is subconscious.
Right. What I've come to see, and you know, when you recognize that four of your five senses plug directly into the brain, when we lost our natural, see, out in nature, everything has access to guidance. Everything is in sync with everything else. Yes, things come and go, but you can see it as an order that everything shares. And with the humans being out of sync with that, we're actually quite destructive. And what I want to do is show people that by plugging back into what's true, they can move back into synchronicity, harmony, and order, if you will. And there's a lot to learn, but recognizing the part resistance plays is huge.
So is that part of your coaching, obviously part of your writing and that sort of thing, but coaching, teaching, whatever programs and things that you put out to everyday clients and customers, is that to starts with allowing, like you said, and then at some point the goal is to move into the unconditional part of it, the unconditional love and acceptance of what's going on out there in the world.
Well, part of the game is to understand that the brain learns patterns and habits, and that's what's unconscious. We don't think unconsciously. We spit out patterns and habits that we've learned, whether from skinning our knee or the first kiss that didn't go well or whatever it was, and we're full of patterns and habits, and since they were chosen unconsciously, they run on their own. And so one of the things we want to learn how to do is, what's the word? Well, build new patterns and habits. And so when I work with clients at a distance, we emulate the concepts of unconditional love. And because that's all you can do. The mind is not that good of a tool, but if it's all you have initially, that's what you work with. And so, like I have a client that comes to mind in California, very wealthy lady. She was technically divorced, but her ex-husband continued to ride her on the kind of car she drove. And she wanted to drive a Prius. She's driving a 12-cylinder Mercedes, and she'd rather have a Prius. And he's pushing her and pushing her. And so there was a dynamic between the two of them, even though they were divorced. And she had to learn how to break that pattern, and it wasn't by fighting. Actually, she had to learn how to love this man to the point that normally in her reaction and her resistance to him, it was feeding him and kept their relationship going. And so she learned how to love him, and through coaching, and we spent a lot of time on the phone. It was, when I say money well spent, we spent a lot of time well spent. And eventually the pattern was broken because both of them were feeding it, patterns and habits, unconscious levels. And she's now very happily married. In fact, I actually haven't heard from her, almost haven't heard from her since her wedding. That was, I think it was in November. very happy mm-hmm. lady, and quite the transition. Money was no object, but an unhappy person, and you know, caught up in the trials and tribulations of life. And money doesn't seem to solve problems itself. So part of it is coaching in that type of manner, where we emulate the concepts of unconditional love. And otherwise, I do a lot of work with neurofeedback. That's really what kind of vaulted me over the top, which is an expression. The first time I heard it was when you and I were talking before we started our interview. But I've now got 40 years of meditation, and I discovered neurofeedback in 2006, and now I have my own proprietary gear and this and that. And we actually can use neurofeedback to quiet the brain so that this resistance and reactionary posturing starts to fade out. And see, your reality creating will shift if your reactionary posturing isn't always defensive, isn't always reactionary. We don't realize how much of it is. Even people have spent their whole life in school, that may be a reactionary posturing against being poor or not being like their parents. And see, they're not being driven by what's true. They're being driven by what they don't want. Even if they have a fantastic education and drive nice cars, it's still what underlies the whole thing may not be true. And so I use neurofeedback to quiet the nervous system so that that subtle connection with source can become evident and built on, eventually to the point where presence and guidance become available. And then if you look at the map of consciousness, how very rapidly as people evolve, how much influence they begin to be able to have. In other words, I know I'm going on here, but like on the map of consciousness, which we haven't talked about, maybe we will for a second, but one person, that's Dr. David Hawkins, comes from the book Power versus Force,
mm-hmm.
but one person at 700, which is the beginning states of enlightenment and admittedly quite high, one person at 700 on that map counteracts the negativity of 70 million people below 200.
Right. I've read Power versus Force, and I know it pretty well, and I've always said, you know, one Jesus is worth 100 million people.
That's exactly
I don't remember
right.
the numbers, but
that's
yes,
exactly
the
right.
the higher
that's
vibrations right. are so much more powerful and so much more effective in canceling out the negatives. So, like you said, you know, one person doing their work so much more helpful than trying to just, you know, let the rest of the world live in the negativity.
Well, and so it's not about 51% of the vote, not at all. It's about consciousness, and as we become more conscious, you'll see law of attraction kick in a more sophisticated manner. You know, the work that I'm doing says that, you know, with the physical training that, you know, I sell gear and I work with clients one-on-one as well as over the phone, but it, you know, bumping yourself from 450 to 650 is a huge jump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one person at 600 counterbalances the negativity of 10 million people. And so that's really what my intention is I'm actually subtly quite political. In other words, if we want to change the world, it's not about bulldozing the District of Columbia off into the ocean. Whoops, I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah, regardless of what a great idea that might be.
Right.
But
what you actually have to do is you have to empower the population. And the only way to do that is plug people back into what's true. And like I said, there's an order that everything shares. And as we come to understand the part our nervous system plays, the part resistance plays, and learn how to open up to a bigger picture, that's the transition I teach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This might be a little off the track for a moment, but having read a lot of Hawkins' books, and for those who haven't, he's done that map of consciousness that Jim was talking about in terms of kind of assigning a number level between 0 and 1,000, obviously higher being, you know, better, and as you mentioned, and you can test for that. There are ways
right.
of checking and testing those
right.
numbers, and that's another discussion for another day. What I was curious about, though, as I read Hawkins, did I not see that, or when it comes to changing the levels of consciousness to the numbers that you were talking about, he didn't seem to think that that was entirely doable, or was
right,
it just
exactly.
difficult, not impossible?
No, he says that on the... It's a great question, and we can... what he says is that the average person bumps 2 points in a lifetime. And,
2 points out
yeah,
of 1,000.
Yeah. And don't forget, this is an exponential scale.
Right.
you know, one person. Well, so what happens is the, obviously there's exceptions. Obviously there are means of, you know, a lifetime of meditation is going to change your numbers more than 2 points. It's just the overall humanity is moving at a rate of, let's say, 2 points. I'm sure any kind of, when I say self-improvement, really what true self-improvement is about introspection, that introspective journey that all of us have to take at some point. And I think as we come to discover that introspective process is where we'll start to see advances in personal consciousness and letting go of the defensive posturing and the automated and habitual and reactionary responses and starting to open up. And, of course, that's what the map represents is, it's measuring consciousness, basically. And,
right.
And
right.
So that's an introspective process. You know, some people are wired to, I think about a third of the people are wired to naturally kind of move faster. And for them, who tends to be my clients, you know, there's ways to actually really bump it up. And I say that with the brain on overload, everybody's brain is on overload from attempting to manually process the world. And when the brain's on overload, that subtle connection with source is not available. We second-guess our intuition time and time again, but as we quiet the brain, it'd be like defragging a hard drive. It's not the same because we're not doing programming. We let the brain clean itself up, which is a big distinction in mind neurofeedback and most of what's out there. It's something I kind of stumbled on. But as the brain quiets down, it starts having more horsepower, like a defragged hard drive, starts performing better and starts spitting out less and less reactionary responses. It also starts to clean up old held trauma. And this whole process of quieting down and less reactionary posturing is how we move forward. And you'll see that on the map. I personally believe that core resonance is capable of 200 points, which mm-hmm. is a huge, huge, huge number.
But that's why I was so surprised by it when you said it, that really threw me there, but in a good way.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, there's people out on the cutting edge, and the cutting edge is different from what, you know, a lot of what's going on, but people that are interested, some people are driven to contribute to making the world a better place. So I say there's activists out there and there's people doing different things, and my job is to provide better tools for the people that are wired to want to contribute to making the world a better place. And there's some people that they just, that's their nature. And so I've evolved tools around that, and that's really what my consulting, where it's all going, and core resonance colonies and taproot by core resonance. And
What you mean with the, I assume, tell me if I'm wrong, the visionary part of it, the person who is, you know, doing that self-work, making a contribution, you know, making decisions, as you say on your website, making decisions based on that access to higher intelligence, better guidance, that sort of thing.
You know, the title of Visionaries Thrive in All Times comes from an expression that I heard at an Abraham seminar a long time ago. And the expression was something like, observers thrive in good times and suffer in bad. Visionaries thrive in all times. And so if we take our hints from the world around us, you know, we're up one day based on headlines, down one day based on the price of gold, up one day on something or this or that. But a visionary holds their vision on the end result and doesn't get caught up in the intermediate stuff. I learned one day from a guy that I worked with for a while that I see through the debris field to the end result, and I don't get caught up in the incidental stuff. I don't even see it. The end result is what I do, and that's what I go for, come hell or high water. And a visionary mode is a much more effective way because you're not paying much attention to what's going on. I'm not really paying any attention. I do live in my own world, and you know, the more people, the better that would do that. The more individuals
right.
we have, better off we'll be.
Right. So as people are listening to this thinking that's where they would like to be, with the, well, yeah, okay. I'll edit that little piece there. I want to get to that part at the end, but I do want to give you a chance to talk about the colonies thing. Tell me a little bit about the colonies idea that you had and I had talked about early on there, that the core resonance and the visionary colony idea. What is that?
Okay,
is that a real thing, a real place where I can go and live?
What it's going to be, what it is, first off, the Maharishi, it's founded on a number of concepts. I actually have the 12 premises of core resonance colonies. One, the first one being it's possible. The second one being something that Margaret Mead said about a small group of dedicated citizens are the only thing that can change the world. I've never really known that quote quite properly. And then I get into other things like the map of consciousness and a number of components of what core resonance colonies is about, 12 premises. And one of them, I think it's number 5, is the Maharishi effect. And the Maharishi effect comes from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the guru that the Beatles discovered in the 60s. And one of the things he said is that when 1% of the population is meditating, the resonance of those people meditating and being mindless, if you will, in a certain manner, influence the whole, or at least the immediate vicinity. And in 1993, there were about 50 or 70 demonstrations over the years back then. One of them was in 1993 in Washington, D.C., over a seven-week period, and John Hagelin was part of that because he's the Peace Party, and he was running for president in the long-distant past, and physicists and whatever. And they had a lot of people overviewing this. There was the FBI looking at it. There was all kinds of professors and academics. And 4,000 meditators showed up over the 7 weeks. And at the height, the last of the 7 weeks, the crime rate and all the different kinds of stuff that go on in D.C., homicides, whatever, dropped by 23%. And that's something that has been repeated and repeated and repeated, the ability of people that meditate to be influential in the surroundings, which is kind of measured in the map of consciousness in a manner of speaking as well. Well, what you do with what a core resonance colony is a group of 6 people. They have to be close to each other because what they do is they share the core resonance training neurofeedback equipment. And what they do as a group and individually is they become coherent internally in their nervous system and their brain by using the gear, and they become coherent individually and they become coherent collectively. And so a colony is a group of 6 who have become coherent in their nervous system and reach out to the cosmos and the cosmos back to them. And it's like a beachfront for bringing consciousness in. It's like an outpost. And I want to see 1,300 of these. Of course, I don't think it'll take that many, honestly. And so a colony is a group of 6 people. Now, they have their lives. They do everything else they want to do, but they take turns doing neurofeedback, the core resonance training, because it's specific, and becoming coherent individually and collectively is a huge component of advancing consciousness on this planet. I call it consciousness forming, which comes from the term terraforming, which probably comes from Star Trek, where you go
right
to a planet and you set up an atmosphere and all that stuff. I want to do consciousness forming, and that's what core resonance colonies is about. And a colony may end up with another group of 6 that also own their own gear. And then, of course, all of these colonies, not so different from the original 13 colonies, they compare notes among themselves and what they discern and what they learn. And I can tell you that what we're doing is we're reaching out to innate intelligence, and what reaches back to us is innate guidance. I've physically had innate guidance override me multiples of times. And as people learn that this is possible, that they learn how to plug in, move into non-resistance, and let innate intelligence and even innate guidance flow through them, I promise you it's an interesting possibility in how we're going to turn the world around. In fact, I think it's, when I say the only one, consciousness is the only thing that will turn the world around.
Right.
So that's
right.
What colonies are about.
Right. Einstein, right? You can't solve the problems that you've created by using the same thinking that got you there.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Exactly right.
So as our listeners may be joining us and thinking about this and saying, yes, I want to get connected to that. We talked a little earlier about this, but maybe as we come down to the finish line here, we could talk a little bit more about what a person can do on in an everyday kind of a situation to start to tap into more of that. And you talked about trying to do what you can to quiet the mind, and there are techniques and tools to do that. That's really what it, where it starts for you, and what else can you offer our listeners in terms of ways to be more connected?
One of the big ahas for me, besides, you know, the neurofeedback world that I discovered, was the part, understanding the part that resistance plays in our day-to-day activities. We don't realize the part, how much resistance and reactionary posturing we spit out at every moment. We settle into patterns and habits, and they are often, I'll say often, it's resistance or non-resistance. We're one or the other. You can't be partly pregnant. You can't be partly non-resistant. And I think to understand that mechanical understanding is huge. And I think just to know that law, you know, what you focus on expands, and resistance is a type of focus.
Right.
And your realities ensue in that manner.
I know, for example, and as you talk about that, I can see myself, and I'm not, and I'm a, consider myself to be quite the calm and mindful person, and yet there are those times, and often in the course of a week, driving around the big city with big city traffic, that something will happen, and you know, I catch myself going down that rabbit hole of, you know, thinking unkind things about my fellow drivers, and at very least, I have the presence of mind somewhere in the back of my mind. Some little nudge goes, "Is that what you really want? Is that where you really want to go?" And then I have that moment of realization where I go, oh, no, it's not. Okay. But, and yet those things still come. How do I get rid of that?
Well, first off, you have to understand that that's defensive posturing. And what it really boils down to is a brain on overload and your inability to process the circumstance that just occurred. And so when you can't, if you don't have the horsepower to process it because your brain's running on overload, you will react to things and say, look, I can't digest that, and so instead you'll react to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the process becomes, you know, as far as talking to the people that are listening, is that when you understand the part that resistance plays and you realize that actually your realities are made up of not what you think, but the accumulation of the patterns and habits that you've acquired. And so to learn how to reacquire your patterns and habits by becoming more conscious and especially recognizing the part resistance plays. And it's great to have that experience of going, oh, that so-and-so just pulled into me, or look what so-and-so did, and then to immediately actually move to love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a mechanical process that will take you a long way. Ultimately, what we want is innate guidance actually processing your world on your behalf. That's kind of another story. But in the meantime, your momentum is a product of the quality of your decisions and choices thus far. And as you refine your patterns and habits, your realities will shift. And in fact, you'll find the people that react to traffic all the time will get more traffic.
Of course.
And people that learn how to love the, and even loving the irritation of going, you know, why did I do that? Instead of beating yourself up, we really have to create the mechanism of acceptance, even in our shortcomings. And as we do that, because the alternative is to beat ourselves up, which certainly continues it. So,
right. And that was a new, what you just said there, if I can stop you for a moment, that was kind of a new idea for me. And that piece about being okay with and even taking it the next step to loving oneself in the midst of those moments where you're not feeling very loving. To say, oh, there I go again, or I mean, is there some, you know, technique or something that you, not technique, but, you know, some little reminder that you use for yourself there? That's just being me. I love when I do that.
Well, first off, of course, you are not your body.
Right.
You are not your mind, and you're not your brain. And so these are accoutrements that you came in with, that you have a bloodline lineage, a DNA, I guess memory is the term I want, that we carry a lot of stuff that isn't even ours. And, you know, in visionary visionaries thrive in all times. I talk about when we come into this dimension. I don't actually, I've worked with too many physicists. I don't buy into reincarnation any longer. I've really kind of outgrown that, even though I was one of the founders of Coca-Cola and all kinds of things. But I really don't accept reincarnation because I don't accept time any longer. And certainly what the human mind creates, I don't really think any of it's very accurate.
Okay, I'm putting you down for a whole nother show to talk about that topic. But meanwhile...
I actually kind of forgot where I was. I got off too far.
Well, we were talking about time, reincarnation, and the things we come in with.
Yeah, so when we come in, that's what... In my personal opinion is karma is... I believe we come in clear and neutral, and I don't believe we come in with past lives. I think Abraham would explain it the same way. And karma is the absorption of the world around us. And that's what karma actually is. And the only way out is love. Now, that's the only way to escape it. So we have our bloodline lineage, which we're carrying a bunch of junk through our bloodline lineage because we were born into a body, even though it isn't ours. And we also have the environment that we were born into, and all of that has to be cleared, and you do it through love. That's part of what the concept of love is about. Technically, unconditional love is unconditional love to your maker, so that you have no resistance to your maker, so that your maker, if you will, innate intelligence, can flow through you without distortion. No distortion. And that's actually, look at a rose. A rose has no resistance and therefore no distortion.
Right.
And when humans get out of resistance, their capacity to become a means by which solutions are delivered, which is a big chunk of what I'm after here, becomes available. And so unconditional love is really about our maker, but we start with ourselves, recognizing that we sucked up a lot of environment when we came in. We have bloodline lineage that we came in with, and the only way out is to love our way out.
Right, because otherwise you're going to have that resistance, and I think that leads to, you know, you may even still be receiving some sort of information or guidance or whatever, and yet in our human form we end up second-guessing.
Yeah, it gets drowned out. A noisy brain will drown it out, and the connection with the cosmos is very, very subtle, and it takes a very... Well, I won't say very refined brain, but it takes a quieted brain. And like I say, defragging a hard drive is a kind of an analogy I like to use. But
right.
It's important to note that the work I do, there's no programming. We let the brain clean itself up, and even that's maybe a story for another time.
It certainly sounds like it. But at this point, I think we can wrap things up. And if I had the Beatles record handy, I would be playing "All You Need Is Love" at this point, because
that
pretty much... That sounds like where we're going with this.
It's the only way out, because resistance perpetuates what we have, and what we have isn't that hot. Now, it doesn't mean that observing can't be really useful, but observing what's wrong perpetuates that, and the only way out is to learn acceptance and allowing, and of course find the high side of anything, and that we want to learn how to build our patterns and habits in that manner, and our patterns and habits actually create our realities. Not our thinking.
Right, right. Jim Hamilton has been with us, coach and writer, and we've gone out so many directions. I know that I'm going to have you back and chat some more in the future, but I can't thank you enough for this last few minutes here that we've shared together. It's been terrific stuff.
Bill, it was a pleasure to be on your program. I want to be supportive of what you're doing and the people out there in any way I can.
Awesome.